Hey there! Welcome to Kush and Kai. This is Kai.
This is Kush.
How you doing, everybody? Thanks for joining us. We're talking movies again today. We will be talking about 2016's Nocturnal Animals, directed by Tom Ford. But before we get into that, Kush, what you seen? What's on your mind? What you seen lately?
Oh, my God. Well, we've definitely got some words to talk about with this Nocturnal Animals that you picked out this week.
I did.
I'm starting to feel like that was a random pick and you had not seen this before yourself.
Nope.
My word.
This was the movie that I opened up because it was like, you know, homework's due. Like, I hadn't worked on the midterm. Open up HBO, boom, Amy Adams in kind of a low-cut thing. There's a distraught Jake Gyllenhaal. Excuse me, just Jake Gyllenhaal. We don't need to see the distraught, but that's in a lot of his movies. And I'm like, sure, I'm game. Quick Google, 74% on Rotten Tomatoes. How bad could this be?
73 with the audience, too, by
oh,
the way.
Wow,
one of those things where it's
rare.
It's neck and neck.
Simpatico. Yeah. That's good. I think that's generally that's an honesty right there when those match up. All right, but before we jump into that, media-wise, where are you? What you seen? You got some episodes, a little Netflix you've been watching?
Everybody was talking big about The Defenders, and we can talk some about that, despite it not being a movie. I saw last night Terminator 2 Judgment Day in 3D, the 3D conversion.
Hell yes. Where did you see this?
I saw this at the Metreon in San Francisco.
Lovely.
Movie still holds up. And the conversion was pretty fantastic.
Tell me about that. Were there moments that were impacted, or was there something that bumped you like, oh, they tried with the 3D?
No. I'd say 85% of the movie was converted and converted properly. Comparing this to the Jurassic Parks re-release 2 or 3 years ago, the only thing they converted in that was the T-Rex chase.
Ah.
Holds up, by the way.
There you go.
I was not disappointed at all.
Awesome.
And I want to say maybe the Velociraptors in the kitchen, but many moons ago, many Ron Diaz's ago. Terminator 2, though, like it's a fantastic movie. Top to bottom, it's still got some horror elements. It's an action movie. I'm flashing back to when I was in the sixth grade and I saw this opening day, and I had to convince the two guys in front of me to buy me a ticket because this is an R-rated movie.
Yes.
You know, this is.
I remember that appeal, too.
You could still get into an R-rated movie in those days, but you had to figure something out or grow a beard, in which case I did 3 years later.
I can't believe I'm issuing this, but this is a Kush and Kai APB right here. If you haven't seen Terminator 2 Judgment Day, anybody within the sound of my voice, please go see that movie. That's on a bunch of all-time lists for very good reason. And I feel like we lose, especially because, to me, I saw it recently, it definitely holds up, not just, I mean, movie-wise, but a lot of those effects, too, you're like, damn, look at that.
Yeah.
Maybe not the prettiest in the shot, but for the time for it to be a pioneer and then also make you go like, oh, yeah, but we can...
The technology of morphing came from this. We have the mighty Morphin Power Rangers because of this movie.
Morph-based technology was unleashed by this movie.
And I want to say this came out after Michael Jackson's Black or White? Black and White?
Yeah.
Like a year after? Like...
Was Black or White was a...
Well, Black or White was like
89? 89?
No, 90.
90? It was 90.
91.
Oh, so 92 was Terminator.
Yes.
T2 was 92.
Yes.
Yeah, so after. Oh, and then, wait, speaking of morphing technology, there was protomorph technology. I believe it was in the other Cameron Endeavor. Was it The Abyss?
The Abyss.
When the thing kind of pops through and they like touch it.
I've never seen The Abyss.
Okay, well, then.
I want to say that was 1988, though.
Yeah, to a smaller degree, definitely do yourself a favor. See The Abyss. You'll feel it. It's good. Mm-hmm. No, good stuff. Good Cameroning party. For myself, just watched the second episode. I'm going Netflix off the wall here. Ozark, okay. Gotta say, Bateman's behaving badly on a lake. Wonderful. If you like Jason Bateman at all, this is for you. Some folks have called it like Breaking Bad meets Justified, somewhere in that territory. Those are very lofty,
right,
very lofty,
right.
But these folks didn't have to like search for it. They just reached and were like, it's kind of like this. I dug that. Netflix, definitely go see that. Mm-hmm. Kush recommends The Terminator 2. All that's a perennial. We could air this tomorrow or like in 30 years from now.
Yeah.
After the moon crashes into the earth. It was supposed to a few days ago. I think that's what the news was about.
Oh, really?
Yeah, a wide swath of the U.S. was destroyed. I wasn't paying attention.
Oh, I must have missed that on Breitbart.
Yeah. Well, good times. Okay, so, Nocturnal Animals.
Nocturnal Animals.
Amy Adams. Jake Gyllenhaal. There's a little Army Hammer in there.
Michael Shannon.
Michael Shannon. The scenery up. Absolutely. And Timothy Olyphant.
Is Timothy Olyphant in this?
He's the cop.
Is he?
That's the cop! With the cowboy hat!
No, that's Michael Shannon.
That's Michael Shannon. Okay, I was high at the time. I was like, it's justified! It's no. Timothy. That's not him.
That's Michael Shannon. Oh, my God. Texas Justice.
Oh, boy.
Aaron, the guy who plays Quicksilver in the Marvel movie.
Shit!
He's the bad guy in this.
Yes.
In the story within the story within the story? Question mark?
Yeah.
But he comes off as evil Chris Evans, and
that's
how
not
I...
Timothy Oli. Hold on. I should call my wife and apologize, because she asked. Sorry, I didn't mean to derail you there.
Not at all.
That is Michael Shannon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, folks. I'm going to make a commitment not to get baked before I watch these movies.
Get baked. Just take notes.
That's true. No, I should have... I've been looking at, like, statistics and cast lists and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I just never bothered to dial in the entire cast.
Yeah. This movie, I think, holds the record. Someone will have to tell me a different movie, but there are so many redheads in this movie. I cannot name another movie prior to this that has as many, if not more.
There are a number of redheads in this movie. Speaking of which, apropos... I believe you're traveling to an event soon.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Tell me about this. It's redhead-centric.
Going to the Redhead Festival in Holland next week.
So listen, everybody, he has a pedigree to talk about the redhead cause here. Mm-hmm. So, this was noticed right up front.
Mm-hmm.
I did write down minute 58. Not a single person of color has appeared in this movie.
Yes.
Look, there is a thing where it's like, write what you know, and it's like Tom Ford, who's a fashion designer. I'm like, this to me doesn't stray too far outside of like his world and experiences. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give him a pass in that sense, because could you imagine, you know what I mean? Like if you just told him you have to redo this movie, but like insert like a very ethnic character, he would mess that up. You know what I mean? Like, that would be a 4-foot putt that he would just sail over your head. Like, I'm glad he didn't do it. He shouldn't be putting that into his movies. I think this is a good example. This sounds super racist, where I'm like, keep them apart. But I'm just saying, like, any character of color that he would have put in that movie wouldn't have come off properly.
Well, there's only really, like, 3 characters in this movie, maybe 4. And that's the main story. That's the A story.
That's the primary here.
The B story has...
Okay, but wait a minute. I'm including all of the scenes where they're standing in a packed museum.
Gotcha.
In the background, there are no people of color whatsoever.
No people of color. Yeah. Okay. Well.
There's just that. I'm saying, like, listen, Tom Ford, fashion director, stay in your lane. And he did. So, yeah, I'm...
Well, Amon was probably booked that day.
There were things. He was busy. There is a movie within a movie within a movie going on here.
At least 2.5 movies happening here. There's the present day situation.
Amy Adams.
There's Amy Adams' life.
Mm-hmm. Which
and then
is,
we have Amy
is
Adams.
Shitty. She has a shitty life
she's
right
a,
now.
She's a shitty person for sure.
She's a shitty person and a shitty life.
She cops to this. She's feeling guilt. She's feeling remorse. There are flashbacks of Amy Adams and Jake Gyllenhaal where they had a life together, and then things went sour.
They were together in college,
mm-hmm.
and it was
a couple of kids following their dream, following their heart.
Couple of kids plus one. They were two plus their kid. She was pregnant with.
That's right.
That was. I'll speak to that just briefly in this because I will. It's hard to praise this movie without sounding like I'm a huge fan. But one thing I did enjoy about this movie was that though the plot or the story was like a little bit limited in scope, it did let itself unfold. Do you know what I mean? Like they didn't do the exposition like way over the head. It was like, no, there's this piece and then there's that piece and then you see this unfolding. That moment where you didn't know whether... Well, I didn't know. Again, watch with my wife. We were unsure whether Jake Gyllenhaal knew that Amy Adams was pregnant.
He did not at first. He may have found out after he caught caught her playing hug and kiss and patty cake with the Army Hammer in the car. But they don't really go into many details. So you have to assume he found out.
Yeah. I guess. He could have just been mad that they're married and she's cheating on him, which is a bummer.
I don't think they ever got married. Did they get married?
I thought they did because she said, I wanted to get divorced before we got remarried.
Interesting.
And again, a little baked. So, not a little. I'm kidding. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure that was in there. And then I read a plot synopsis where it said, it's quoting her saying we need to get divorced. So that was a thing where it's like, does he know that she aborted their unborn child to divorce him and marry Army Hammer? And it's sort of like, this isn't even item number one that we push into she's not a great person bucket. There's some stuff that falls in there. And oddly enough, even if he did know that she aborted their unborn child, it would appear that he is more upset that she criticized his unfinished novel from college.
He's definitely got a priority issue. He needs to definitely adjust his, what's the word I'm looking for?
The compass on what to focus on and take revenge from. I think this is a good thing to point out in this story, because there's a couple pieces here. The first is, he wrote this story, ostensibly. He wrote this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
He put her name in the front of it. He dedicated it to her.
That's right.
He sent her the manuscript to Amy Adams, who he's divorced from years ago.
At least 20 years at this point.
At least 20 years.
She's moved on. She's got a daughter that's in college.
Big chunk of time.
Sleeping with a man, waking up in her only scene. She's just ass naked. Lots of ass in this movie, by the way.
Yeah. Don't shy away from the ass, folks. That's fine.
Well, depending on the ass.
Yeah. Well, look. Yeah, that did bite us in the ass. Forgive me. That did bite us in the ass. Because I remember when it was like, yeah, we can put nudity in movies. And then it shifted in a modern sense. Because, like, I feel like in the 80s we had a firm hold of, like, and the early 90s, oh, there's some titties. And now it's just the most nudity you see. It's like, there's dong. Mm-hmm. There's a guy running across, we just see a lot of dong now. I don't know how that happened.
Oh, that's Todd Phillips and Jason Segel, most likely.
There's them. But Borat didn't help. But just like flashing dong. And it's like, okay, now that we've swung this far to that side of the scale, if you just threw equal time for boobies in there, I could kind of work my way towards like, fine. You know what I mean? Like, whatever.
And if you want boobies, this movie has boobies in it. It's the opening title crawl. And by the way, this is where my notes start.
Yes.
At minute two.
Kill it, Kush.
God damn you, Kai.
Get it, Kush.
At minute three, you're not allowed to pick movies anymore, Kai, because it is the most.
Their
titties on the screen. And at first you're like, oh boy, oh, and then you see
they take up the whole screen?
The entire screen.
Titties take up the whole screen!
But then why do they take up to the most?
Why do they take up the whole screen?
Because they're attached to the largest.
They're obese.
Grossly
they're past
obese.
Obese. Morbidly obese.
Morbidly obese.
Women.
Thank you.
Only women.
And they're the happiest women in the world, by the way.
There is no
shame in their game.
They're wearing, like, the
very little.
No, what's the
cowboy hat.
They've got masks, like the masquerade masks and some beads. Something like a boa kind of a thing going on. I did give props to Tom Ford, fashion designer Tom Ford, who helped rescue Gucci in the 90s. Tom Ford for putting that at the front of his movie.
Yeah.
Who, again, there many parts of this movie, very pretty, very well crafted.
A lot of great exterior shots.
Gorgeous. It was gorgeous.
Landscapes, sunsets.
He had, especially for somebody who's their second film, he's got a very firm grasp over that. Mm-hmm. So him putting this in there, I don't know what it's thumbing its nose at, but it's sort of like, yeah, I'm into fashion. I'm into bodies. Look at these bodies. Yeah. He's like, well, he makes you, and it's an extended title sequence. Mm-hmm. It's like, you get in slow motion, the gyrating. There's some stuff. You're like, did she have her gallbladder removed? What's that scar? There's a lot going on there. So props to him for that being the opening sequence.
I don't think I can give him props for that.
I'm giving him
maybe
props.
Maybe I'm shallow, and that's fine.
To probably have shallow. The balls to put the tits in this piece of cinema.
Lots of balls in those tits.
The balls for the tits. Good stuff. Good stuff.
You've talked about Tom Ford. He's from the fashion world. This is his second movie he's directed.
Second movie. Again,
second
impressive.
Movie, two of two. Both movies have been Oscar nominated. I don't know if any of them won any. I didn't bother to look that up. But that's still quite an accomplishment on his part.
Definitely. Did he? I did not look this up. Did he write this endeavor?
He did the screenplay. This is based on a book by a gentleman whose first name I don't have here, but the initials A. Wright.
A. Wright.
Yeah.
So, do we know? I should have looked this up. But did you catch whether this was about, this was an as-is thing where the story was?
This is based on a novel called Tony and Susan. Austin Wright is the gentleman's name who wrote it. And I have a feeling that this was supposed to be like a stage play.
Okay.
This is just guess. I have no knowledge on this.
This could totally work, blocked out as a stage play.
Because there's so few characters in it. There's so few locations. Like, it's a very... Despite the fact that there are three stories going on here, it's a very condensed location, very condensed world.
I think your biggest sort of logistical problem translating this to the stage is, how are you going to get that many fat, naked women onto the stage for just the title sequence of your play?
Promising cake? I don't know.
There we go. There we go.
That was rude.
So, I have a thing about, as I'm watching this, it's like... Mm-hmm. A writer, it sounds silly, but a writer wrote this movie. Normal people don't think about sort of like art as a weapon, especially not as insidiously as some writers. Again, I fancy myself a writer, so I see this in other folks, where you have to resist the urge to write about writing.
That's where the rabbit hole begins.
Yes.
This is clearly a man who's writing what he knows about, which is a story about a writer writing what he knows about, or something that has happened to him.
Yeah.
There's 20 years of nothing, and then one day, inspiration shot him like a thunderbolt, and
boom!
He came out with Nocturnal Animals.
Oh, yeah.
the book within the movie, within the story.
So, if you haven't seen it, and it's just patently confusing what we're talking about, it is Amy Adams receives a manuscript. Mm-hmm. Of this book. What was it called?
The book is Nocturnal Animals.
The book is Nocturnal Animals as well. Kind of meta. So we're going in. The book is about a gentleman who is on a road trip with his wife and daughter, who he gets separated from by some hoodlums.
It's very it's reminiscent of Deliverance without the male-on-male rape.
Deliverance, or there's a Kurt Russell film called Breakdown.
Ooh, that's a great movie.
Where to me, this is like Breakdown if written by like a depressed heroin addict. Like, this is what would happen in that scenario. Yeah, the Kurt Russell Breakdown. In Kurt Russell's Breakdown, separated, he's lost, he's talking to the cops who are in on it, who are kind of like gaslighting him. But then he figures out where the tractor trailer is, and he tracks the thing, and he beats somebody up, and there's a chase. This is not that.
No, and I thought we were going there for a second. I was like,
oh, I thought so
like,
too.
Like Michael Richards. Michael Richards is totally in on it.
Michael Richards, what are you doing here?
He just stormed into the sheriff's room.
Stick a fork at him. Uh oh.
Giddy up.
Don't worry.
We'll find your wife. Giddy up.
Don't worry. It's been 58 minutes. No people have called. You're good. Okay. So yeah, Jake Gyllenhaal, literally in the sub. Thing that's going on in the book that she's reading.
And Jake Gyllenhaal, by the way, is playing two characters.
He is.
He's playing
himself at the top level.
He's playing himself.
Well, he's playing... Okay, Amy Adams and he knew each other in high school in the real world.
Yeah. And his real world name is Edward Sheffield.
That's his slave name.
That's his slave name.
Edward Sheffield. He's the real him, which lives in this book.
Mm-hmm. The character within the book is Tony Hastings.
Tony Hastings.
Okay, and Tony Hastings also has a redheaded wife and a redheaded daughter.
I enjoyed that because it was not Amy. We're going to call it a flash in where she's reading the script. Mm-hmm. It's not Amy Adams to start with. It's some other character.
It's Ilsa Fisher.
And then Amy Adams starts imagining herself as that character, which I thought was a great, that's a great piece of storytelling. It made it very, like, real, and that made me go, it's like, did this happen to them?
Yes.
And then take a step back, did this happen to his ex-wife? Like, he's recounting the tale, and this is why they couldn't be together. And again, I usually watch such different fare. I found it enjoyable that he's just giving us some breadcrumbs as to, like, really, I was really paying attention. I was invested to be like, why is this why she's such a bitch? No, but I was giving her a chance.
Right.
Anyway, so well done, Tom. Well done, Tom Ford. Well done.
There's a lot of, the way Tom Ford puts the pieces of this puzzle together, it's pretty fantastic. So at some point, Tom Hastings is on his, they're on vacation. They're driving through the country. They're driving through Arizona, I want to say. Could be Texas. Could be Wyoming.
Yeah.
They're in an area where
desert and barbed wire and hicks.
If you can find a hick, very few hicks.
Yeah.
They're driving on the road, and the road's being occupied by someone in a Mercedes, whatever. It's a luxury car for sure. And on his left, you can't tell if they're together or if they're harassing him. I would later believe that they were going to harass that guy, and then they found this family to engage later.
Mm, indeed.
So these folks on the left, they pull in front, and then they end up running Jake Gyllenhaal's car off the road.
Well, it's the, wait, they first they do the swoop and stop, where it's the swindler's maneuver where you stop short in front of somebody to get them to hit you and file a false claim, which he's yelling at him, pull over for the insurance! So they do get him to pull over.
Mm-hmm.
And then I do find it comical that the car with one busted tire will not move at all.
Not at all.
That car won't can't one rotation out of the tire.
It's not even the little engine that could.
It's badly popped.
It just won't.
Yeah. Yet changing the tire will remedy this.
So that entire scene is frustrating. I had to pause it multiple times out of tension that I was feeling.
It was anxiety.
You're stressful.
It was anxiety inducing because it was like, we know the subtext here. Why aren't you running?
What's wrong
with you?
Why aren't you putting up a fight?
Something.
Like, this is not going to end well, bud. Like, go down swinging. Or, I mean,
you felt that too because it was like, we feel where this, we're all pushing in this way. And they did build it rather gradually. Like, oh, no, just, it was like one little extra piece. It's like, well, no, you got to get in that car. Okay, well, then they have to come. It was just, you know what I mean? They didn't, it wasn't all out front that they were just awful. We knew it was, but.
And the locals are using the main character's moral sense, moral compass against him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, you're just going to leave us like that? You're not going to follow us to the police station? Like, he's. It's weird how the locals just paint these people into a corner using their own morals.
Yes. And yeah, that was very, it was insidious about it. Because
he's
main character, was it Ron? I forget his name. But he's large and blustery and kind of a bully. And it's like, yeah, oh, logically, sure, these things.
So that's Aaron Taylor Johnson, a.k.a. Ray Marcus, a.k.a.
Ray,
Evil Chris Evans.
Ray Marcus. Oh, yeah, Evil Chris. And so they get Jake Gyllenhaal separated from his wife and kid, who that his wife and kid are driven off by Ray and another accomplice, and then Jake Gyllenhaal is driving their car with another guy who
named Lou.
Lou.
And Lou is just steering him wrong everywhere. He's like, just keep going straight, just keep going straight.
They
and
go past their car where
they
it's
go past
parked,
their car at one point.
And then he has him get out. And just says, bye.
Just abandons him in the middle of the Arroyo Desert.
Middle of nowhere.
Yeah. And in theory, he should have died there.
Yeah.
Like, by all accounts, Lou thought this guy is going to die here. No problem.
But he jogs off.
he makes it. He makes it to the road. He makes it to a phone.
He makes it to not Timothy Only Fantastic.
Makes it to Michael Rich's sheriff's station.
And then they recreate, and then they go back and find it. And in fact, the moment definitely where it was a realization that it's like, oh, this isn't the Kurt Russell version, was they cut to a year later into the investigation, which, I mean, they don't really go into like, they don't really go into like him suffering or wondering or whatever, but like, how fucking, like, he walks away from this thing without his wife and kid. Ongoing investigation. And when they get back to them, they're just tracking these people down.
Yes.
That's why he comes back. and not Timothy Olyphant, decides to take the law into his own hands.
Texas Justice,
because he has lung cancer.
He has lung cancer. His days are numbered. It could be weeks, could be days. And judging by the amount of lungs he coughs up, he's only got hours, actually. Yes.
I don't know what sort of like dime store novella or comic or serialized whatever that this, the Texas lawman with nothing left to lose, was plucked from, but fits perfectly.
Oh, right there. It's my favorite character.
It's fantastic.
I'm absolutely disappointed though when he walks off the camera, he's never seen again.
Never seen again.
we don't know what happens to
Gone.
Him. So at some point, they catch Lou.
Yes.
Lou gets arrested for whatever happens, and then weeks later, they catch up with evil Chris Evans.
Ray. Evil Chris Evans.
And he IDs him, but something happened where a warrant wasn't signed, or there wasn't...
He said, like, oh, you didn't read him your rights, or something.
Something happened. There was a loophole.
Some bureaucratic bullshit.
He somehow gets off scot-free. And that's when Texas Justice comes in, like, we know where he is, we're going to get him right now, are you prepared to do this? And good for Jake Gyllenhaal, he's like, yeah. This is the first time he's formed a semblance of a spine in this story, in this story within the story. They catch up with Aaron Taylor Johnson, and when he isn't playing stupid, he's just not saying a word, until finally, just that smirk takes over. And he just starts bullying him. He's got a gun in his face. And he's pretty much daring the guy to shoot him. And he knows he's not going to do it.
Yeah.
He gets away. There's a foot chase.
There is a foot chase.
Lou gets shot. Lou's put down right outside. But Aaron Taylor Johnson gets away. And this is where we don't see Sheriff Michael Richards anymore.
None.
He's like, I'm going to catch up with you. I have a feeling I know where he's going to go, but just in case I'm wrong, go to this other spot that we know about also. And sure enough, he's there just taking a nap. It's not a care in the world. That's something. What is that? Was that Moxie or...
I don't... To not have nerve endings where you're like...
Sociopath.
These guys, dirty cop kind of... came after me, they had a gun to my face, like, and to just go to sleep is just, like...
He is taking a nap like he's getting ready for work on Monday.
You're a sociopath to be able to... Oh, I'm just not a care in the world. So, yeah, that adds to the... you should definitely have been put down. From what I remember, and again, we're towards the end here, but from what I remember, there's another scuffle. Gyllenhaal takes a fire poker to the noggin.
Yeah, to the eye.
And then the other guy gets also donked in the head too.
He gets shot.
He gets shot.
He actually gets shot twice.
Twice. That's what it is. He gets popped twice.
Gyllenhaal gets cracked in the skull.
And when we come to Gyllenhaal, blind.
Blind in both eyes, right?
Yes, okay. He's blind, blind.
Blind, blind.
And this is, wait a minute. This is our second movie where the protagonist comes down blind.
Now, are we to assume that... So, Gyllenhaal's blind. He even ends up tripping over evil Chris Evans' body.
Mm-hmm. ECE.
ECE. Discovers that ECE is dead. And then just wanders out into the desert. Kind of has a moment of God. Just cries into the heavens and then dies?
He did... I had to rewind it. He fell on his gun and shot himself.
He shot himself.
Accidentally.
Oh.
He fell on himself and he shot himself.
Are you serious?
Yes.
I don't know,
he expires. Okay, so everybody who is watching, who is reading the imaginary manuscript, and might I remind you, everything that we're seeing, all the characters in there, are inside of Amy Adams' head.
Yes.
Right? So they could, you know, this is just from her reading or pull up, but... That's how this story ends, which is ostensibly that she's made herself the wife of, the revenge is being sought for, which, is it meted out? Kinda. But this causes her to finally reach out to, I forget his top level, this is Inception
Edward.
Now. What's his real, Edward.
Edward, Team Edward.
Reach out to Team Edward to be like, let's have dinner. And he says, when and where? Yep. And then she's waiting at a dinner and very like meticulously shot, like she's waiting, she's kind of adjusting, she's shifting.
Looking to the nines, by the way.
Looking great.
Looking fantastic.
Looking great.
Amy Adams, 10 stars.
He does not show.
Does not show up.
Let me ask you something. Now, did some people have interpreted this as he killed himself? He committed suicide.
Okay.
Which I could see. I'd be fine with that.
Based on what?
The ultimate revenge or something. I don't know.
The ultimate revenge is he killed himself. Ooh, who's the joke on in that one?
That, again, I agree, because here's the thing. I think his actions and behaviors point to the fact that he not only does not have friends, he does not have a best friend. Because if you caught wind of your buddy going like, look, I know it's been 20 years, but I'm writing this book, and it's just for her, and I'm going to send her the thing, and then I'm not going to show up. It's like, we need to get you an eHarmony account. Like, this is no bueno. You cannot be focusing your time on this. You're doing all this for it to go nowhere to prove that you're a good writer when she mildly criticized your work in college. This is what you're doing? Not even a friend. A therapist, a court-appointed psychiatrist would say, this is not a healthy behavior that you're exhibiting here.
Not healthy in the slightest.
So, yeah, they're both kind of jerks in that way, where it's like, Jake, you gotta let it go. Mm-hmm. And especially if I was giving this person advice, where it's like, no, there'll be revenge. This will be my form of closure. It's like, closure's imaginary. That's not real. Don't worry about that. You need to move on. You know what you win? You're not with her. She's awful. Mm-hmm. Move it on. Just move it on. That's what you win. You're not with her. That's great. Let's keep going.
We haven't even brought up what kind of rekindled this for Amy Adams. Is that she married Armie Hammer.
Armie Hammer.
She ended up marrying Armie Hammer.
Immediately
following the abortion.
Yeah.
And
which she felt bad about for a moment in the car.
It turns out that, you know, after 20 years, I guess everything just kind of dries up or whatever the word is, but neither of them are in love anymore.
No.
Neither of them are in love. It turns out he's actually cheating on her.
Flagrantly cheating.
To the point where, two things, where he's in the elevator like, yeah, I'm heading to my floor.
I go to the office.
He's like, well, that's not our normal floor. And at first I want to say, you know what? It's not about you. I'm quote unquote on business, so it doesn't matter what floor I sleep on.
It was full. They put me in a different thing.
Quite a stink I made in the lobby over this. Who does that?
This elevator has an operator.
An elevator operator, and he slips up.
The operator, you know, we're going up in the elevator, and he's talking on the phone, and then the elevator operator goes like, ma'am, your floor.
Yeah, 31st floor, man.
And then Amy Adams, they do the Dutch angle at Amy Adams back in the States. It's like, oh no, because she knows then. But she does, either she's lying to herself or she just wants to power through. Because she doesn't, like, force the issue when he comes back. She's very, like, I'm not going to say lovey, but, like, wants to be connected to him. Where it's like, well, what do we don't do? Let's go do something. You know what I mean? Like, she's...
She's doing that before she finds out he's cheating on her. Like she's frustrated with her marriage.
Yeah,
but she, I guess for whatever their story is, she's trying. She's like, I've given security the weekend off. By the way, they have a whole security team.
Yeah,
I've given security the weekend off.
Wait,
let's go to the beach house. And he's like, yeah. I have to go back to New York.
I just got
back from New York. Well, I gotta go back.
That's
how we afford this luxurious house and security team and the gates that are reflective, so when you hit the high beams, you blind yourself.
She blinded herself in the gates. I thought that was great. That was a great detail because it's very purposefully put in there. It's like, oh, the wealth. It's so much the privilege. I can't even look. It's terrible. What? Why do they have money? How does this happen? Because it's not from her job. She's like a museum curator or something.
She comes from money.
Is that what it is?
She comes because her mom is like, you don't want to hang out with Edward. You shouldn't be married to Edward. He's just he's got no drive. He's an artist. He's only starving.
He's a bad writer.
He's a bad writer. He's not going to do anything
bad
for
writer.
You. He's
bad.
Not going to be able to afford your lifestyle.
Bad writer. Poor.
You should
boo.
Marry Armie Hammer.
Yay!
Armie Hammer's got all the money right now, and his family comes from more money, and Armie Hammer's your best bet
and
right now.
And look how blonde he is!
Look
at this!
He's tall!
Oh, for days!
Yeah.
Dick for days,
probably. Probably.
We love you, Army. So, yeah, she doesn't marry at the bet. Yeah, the mom, I didn't get a read on that. I was like, it's not her. She's like a museum curator. Like, look, even if it's prestigious, that's not...
No.
Unless you're doing the endowments, like, that's not your money.
She's probably got her own money, but Armie Hammer has all the money.
Is he... He's got to be in
business. He's in stocks. Business, he's in oil, something. He's an industry man for
sure. I kind of appreciate that they don't open that door, though. Like, I'm curious, but I'm like, they're obviously, like, they're Hollywood Hills philanthropy, you know, high society wealthy.
Money longer than train smoke.
Yes. Yes. That's solid. So we get back to. Yeah, we've fully highlighted she's awful. She makes these decisions for the wrong reasons and then backs it up with abortions and then carries on her farce of a marriage and then agrees to see her ex-husband. So we get it. She's not great.
She makes a lot of bad decisions in her life, and she's feeling the repercussions of that. Like, it's she's talking, she's having trouble sleeping. She's calling Armie Hammer at 3 in the morning. He's like, it's 3 in the morning. Yeah. Why would I call you? You should be asleep.
Yeah.
In all fairness to him, even though he's cheating on her.
No, but I like the cheating logic acting. Why are you calling? Yeah. It's got a primary there. It's good stuff.
She's boring her own assistant who's like, you're just not sleeping. He's like, no, my ex-husband wrote a book, dedicated it to me. So it's bringing up all sorts of weird feelings. Like, you're not sleeping, are you? Like, you've got Armie Hammer.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. She has to take a sleeping pill that night. The first, I remember they made a deal out of that. They're okay. Showing the thing. So, inside that, and then her not being good, and then Jake Gyllenhaal not being able to move on, I think they make a great non-couple. They deserve, like, they both can't move past the fact that, you know, of their hang-up, so they kind of deserve what they get then.
Well, and because we've only issued spoilers, this entire episode is spoilers.
Yeah, geez, that's all we do, really.
Well, that's all we're going to do. How do you talk about?
Well, this is what I wanted to talk. Yeah, this is what I wanted to talk about.
So the movie ultimately ends with her just staring into the abyss, the 1,000-yard stare that only a soldier from Vietnam shares.
Yes,
and roll credits. That's the movie within the movie within the movie. Now. This segues into our IMDb trivia for the week.
Hit us. Lay it on us, Kush.
There is 3 pages worth here, and we're definitely not going to read all of them here.
Get us started. What do we got? You don't need to, you know, you just jump
I'm gonna
in.
I'm going to pull the top 2 that I enjoyed.
Yeah.
So originally, fashion director Tom Ford, intended to make this 2 films based on this one novel.
Ah.
One was going to be the original source material. And the other was going to be a story completely derivative of it.
Ooh.
So I don't know what that means. This is just what the IMDb trivia tells you, and it's only as good as Wikipedia. So take all this with a grain of salt. Laura Linney, who played Amy Adams' mom, she originally replaced Kim Basinger.
Oh.
Which would have been a great...
I think that would have been solid. I think Kim Basinger, sort of like snooty high society... Mm-hmm. And also, too, they did insert shades of the family being very kind of, like, conservative and not a huge fan of gay people. That was a plot. Cooper. Poor Cooper.
Poor Cooper.
Poor Cooper. Cooper was the brother who had a crush on Jake, I believe. They came up on the first date.
Oh, really?
She said that.
Oh,
yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. His best friend was in love with him. She was dating the best friend. And he's just, instead of freaking out, which, you know, many guys would, he's just like, oh, I feel really bad for him. Like, he's a good dude.
She put it on Front Street, and he just served it right back. I thought that was good. It was a good...
It makes you like Team Edward.
Yeah.
You want to root for Team Edward.
Yeah.
So, which is why we get to this next detail here. So, Tom Ford has established in interviews that the ending is intended to be interpreted... subjectively by the viewers. By the way, I hate that.
Yeah.
Edward did not show up either because he is still in love with her and it is too painful to see her again.
Yeah.
Or because she gave him the inspiration and strength that he needed to write his masterpiece and move on. It is up to the audience to decide that.
Wait, that he moves on?
He has moved on by standing her up at dinner.
Okay. I don't believe that for a second, though.
This brings us to a new segment we're going to start. We've been doing this show for 15 years, and we're going to introduce a new segment. Creative writing assignment. So anytime we come up with a movie
where the ending is interpreted subjectively, we're going to write the ending.
I think so. All right, you want me to take a crack at this one?
Here, I would love to hear your story if you have one.
Did you write out?
I wrote a story.
Story time.
But here are the rules.
Yeah.
I want it only to be a first draft. Let's not put too much thought into this.
No, I did.
We all have lives.
I was just going to freestyle it.
Freestyle it, baby. Freestyle it. But keep it between 300 and 500 words. We're not trying to bore the audience
here.
No,
I dig.
Would you like to go first?
No, you've got a prepared statement here. So don't let me get in the way.
Nocturnal Animals, closed ending. Part one.
Oh, damn.
I have not written part two, but
that's fine.
I think this could go on and on.
Enough based preface. Jump.
Based on characters by A. Wright. Nearly 10 minutes after Susan Morrow came to the realization that she had been stood up by her ex-husband, Edward Sheffield, her blank stare across the room was interrupted by a server bringing her one final highball, along with a check for the previous four she imbibed while waiting the 3 hours. This one's on the house, Miss Morrow, but our kitchen is now closed and will be fully closed in 20 minutes. Susan's shaking her head, coming out of the thought, processing that the waiter had just politely asked her to leave. Susan pulled out her credit card that had promised double points on all purchases and placed it in the check fold. I get double points if I use this card. Oh, we actually don't participate in this card's rewards program. Susan gave him a sweet but empty smile and thanked him for insisting to still use it to settle her tab. He gave a small bow and went on to the other tables to collect the checks that had already been paid for. Susan realized that she'd been dealing with an ache on the back of her heel. Her Valentino Garavani leather pumps that she wore for the first time tonight, irritating her skin raw from all the restlessness that Susan encountered waiting for Edward. Edward, I never thought you'd do something to me like this. She thought, this is so out of character for you. You must be in an accident. Or lost. You can never drive correct. You're always making us late. Her breathing more exasperated, only to be brought back to normal, and realizing that she had indeed been stood up upon the waiter bringing back her credit card. She gave a final sigh, finished her drink, signed the receipt, closed the fold, got up and walked away from the table. As she passed the host and another waitress, she wished them good night now, slightly slurring her speech as high five balls will do. Susan could only think about how good it would be to get home and into a nice warm bath. The waiter came back, collects her checks finally. He peeks at the amount left for a tip. 12%? You bitch. End scene.
Oh, yeah. Kush. Oh, you've outdone yourself.
Thanks.
Oh, fantastic. No, that I could see that take playing out and Tom Ford, like, pulling his headphones down. Cut, cut. Dear, talk about the rewards points one more time. Yeah, no, I'm right there. I
had one ending where I wanted her to have more dialogue with the actual valet
yes.
at the beginning of the movie.
Yes.
And then she just finally doubles down, goes all in, calls him a cocksucker, and screams MAGA as she drives off because she refuses to tip him.
There you go. So, I feel like I wanted to believe the suicide plotline because it's more of a, because sometimes when, like, for an ending, you want something like definitive, right?
Yes.
Him not showing up, that's fine. You know what I mean? Like that, you could take that however it is. Killing himself, sure, but sort of silently in the distance, I don't know. So, we're there. She's waiting. She's racked. She's annoyed. It's a tense moment. She hasn't left yet, though. Cut to interior Jake Gyllenhaal's apartment, top-level Jake Gyllenhaal. He's there with the manuscript. You see his apartment. It's got pictures of her and details of the life and whatever, and there's news clippings. And you sort of sit there, and you see him playing with something, and he's playing with a gun. And it's just, it's like a revolver, six-shoot thing. And he pulls the trigger, he pulls the hammer up. He puts it to his head, and then he undoes the hammer and he puts it back down. And then we cut back to Amy, who's paying the bill, and then she's waiting for your moment. She's tapping with her phone. You get that kind of do that three-quarter cut, and then you see they're sweeping. Two of the servers are talking to each other in the back as they're closing up. And then as she's getting done, she exits the restaurant, and we see Jake Gyllenhaal across the street, and he's standing there, and she gasps, and she takes a step towards him, and then he steps a few steps into the street, holds up the gun, and is walking towards her. He pulls the hammer back and then gets hit by a Times delivery truck. He's laid out in the street. He's bleeding out. He looks up. She runs to his side. Oh, my God, oh, my God. She kneels down in the street. There's a few people looking. But, you know, like, when an accident first happens, if you don't have that, like, one or two Good Samaritan that rush over, you get that standbyer thing. They're in a circle out there. She's looking at him. He looks up. And he's trying to mouth a word. And then he looks at his hand and he drops the gun. And through gurgling blood, he says, "I'm sorry." And then she, racked with guilt, immediately grabs the gun, wraps her lips around the barrel, and kills herself. End of movie.
That's very dark, too.
Pow! There we go.
Pow, indeed. Well, so there it is. That's two endings of an interpreted...
Two possible... They literally... That was, as you were correct, that was a homework assignment to be like, oh no, I'm not going to finish the movie. You can interpret it and finish it your damn self.
Now, audience, get into this. Remember, 300 to 500 words. Don't bore everybody.
Yeah.
But have at it.
Have at it.
Try and involve only the characters involved, but... Shit, maybe you want to make this a Fast and Furious crossover.
Email us at...
Maybe you want Bruce Wayne from DC Universe come in.
It's on.
Yeah.
It is on. Well, email us your submissions at cushionkai@juno.net. And yeah, we will be hearing from you next time. Again, for Cush and Kai, this is Kai.
This is Cush.
Have a good one.